5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Today, our excited civic officials can be found at shopping mall ribbon cuttings around the country, making the most of an event that pales in significance to the public projects from quite another era.
Let's go shopping!
And so Boulder Dam stands today, stemming and controlling the floods, and bending the will of the Colorado River, to perform the fruitful tasks of a civilization rapidly invading the limits of its last frontier.
The era of the grand constructions in America, the Grand Coulee Dam, the Golden Gate Bridge, the George Washington Bridge, the unearthly Boulder Dam, now called the Hoover Dam. You can barely imagine things like this being built in our time. The Hoover Dam supplies water for Los Angeles, Las Vegas, and everything in between. Actually, the people who can still imagine building such things are doing it today. The folks at the giant Bechtel Corporation built the Hoover Dam in partnership with 6 private companies, a symbiotic public-private relationship that has come to define modern-day America. It also made the folks at Bechtel into billionaires. A new book by Sally Denton, The Profiteers, Bechtel and the Men Who Built the World, looks at a company that is the face of America in the 21st century, representing its shareholders rather than the face of American democracy.
Having grown up in the West and seeing Bechtel as the first major Western mega company that really built, you know, the American West, which is what I thought the book would be about when I started the research 4 years ago, I was shocked at how it's a household name in the American West, and most of America has never heard of it. Everybody I told, you know, the 30-second elevator pitch about the book I was writing, everybody would say, who? But then if you go to the Middle East or to Europe or practically any other continent in the world, it is a household name.
How did the company get started, and where did the family come from?
The company really got started with Warren Bechtel, who was originally from Pennsylvania, but he was a road grader across Oklahoma into northern Nevada and then to California, and got the first government contract to build a major highway in northern California. So it really starts with government contracts, but the signature project was Hoover Dam. There's this great mythology that has arisen around the dam being an FDR project at the height of the Depression to put America's unemployed to work, when in fact it was very much a Herbert Hoover design and creation as a boon to his fellow California industrialists and big agriculture and real estate developers, and as the first major private-public partnership of its kind in America. But basically, this was such a massive engineering feat that there was not one particular company in the entire American West capable of handling it on its own. So they teamed together and then just took off from there into defense contracting in the build-up to World War II and through the Cold War and into nuclear energy, into oil pipelines, into ports. I mean, it's hard to find a place in the world or a type of project that Bechtel has not built.
I mean, anyone in San Francisco can point out the Transamerica Pyramid, the old Transamerica Pyramid building, or the Embarcadero.
Bay Bridge. BART.
The BART or the Golden Gate. And if you want to drive from Britain to France, you go through Bechtel.
They built the tunnel. It's hard to even keep up with them, but if you just go to the website, it's hard to know for sure how many airports. But Abu Dhabi and Dubai and Qatar and McCarran here in Las Vegas, and they just did the Silver Line from Dulles, the metro there in Washington, D.C. I was shocked to find that it had not only stayed in construction, but had expanded into nuclear power and oil pipelines throughout the Middle East, throughout the entire world. It was the largest producer of nuclear energy of any company in the world. Got the largest single first contract for the reconstruction of Iraq after our invasion of Iraq, and just they're always there in anything that's happening.
How much are they worth? Any guesses?
Well, like everything with them, you have to take them at face value. They, you know, they've got, I don't know how many billions of dollars of contracts under currently for, say, the year 2015. I think that Riley and Stephen Bechtel Sr. or Jr. are both, according to Forbes, I think worth the same amount, maybe $37 billion. which is in the land of billionaires, that's not really that much. They're worth a lot less than a lot of other billionaires, but they wield a lot more political influence than companies and individuals worth much, much, much more.
You described the revolving door between government and Bechtel. You know, as the names accumulate, it's really quite extraordinary. But again, not necessarily illegal at all.
No, I don't think there's anything illegal about this. But, you know, I argue in my book that Bechtel really formulated the pattern of the revolving door back in the 40s and 50s, which then became its pro forma. Nobody even, you know, people barely even notice it anymore. I focus some, not entirely, but I focus a lot of attention to the Reagan era because of the Reagan Revolution, which really signified the movement of the American West into an economic and political power center. And Bechtel was really symbolic of that, as Reagan plucked two executives from Bechtel, George Shultz as Secretary of State and Caspar Weinberger as Secretary of Defense. So it really put Bechtel on the map. But Bechtel had been mining government from the days of the Atomic Energy Commission. Every company in America does it now to such an extent that there's actually, you know, rules for a cooling off period.
The history of the relationship between government and corporations is a strange one in the United States. I mean, in the beginning, there was extreme suspicion of corporations, and chartering corporations was something the government did at its own whim, and they could rescind those charters without even a reason. And then I think during the progressive period of Teddy Roosevelt's, corporations got a bad rap for being too big, too powerful. Now it seems we're on the other side, that, you know, there's an admiration that goes with companies the size of Bechtel, and almost an admiration for the secrecy, that if you don't have to report, wow, you're really powerful.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an enviable position that its rivals, I think, truly do envy. One of the things that really struck me when I started out, I kept thinking, because of the symbiotic relationship between Bechtel and the U.S. government and American foreign policy through several decades, when I started, I thought, well, here's Bechtel, who's kind of, you know, the corporate arm of U.S. government. And by the end of my research and writing, I felt like oftentimes U.S. government was the public policy arm of Bechtel, that in many ways Bechtel was larger than the U.S. government.
Sally Denton is the author of The Profiteers, Bechtel and the Men Who Built the World. Thanks so much, Sally.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.